Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here we go.
This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I'm Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Lifty Delaney. So what?
It's the top 10 of the 50 greatest British moments that we've been doing over the past couple of weeks or so. I mean, this is going to be a series of podcasts that will stand alone and live on forever, almost, I think. As a slice of British history.
Can you see, people say that there's no such thing as the end of history, right? That history is always moving and returning. But I feel that in some ways we're drawing a line under history with this series of podcasts. I can't see anything happening after this that would surpass this top 50.
Well, you're going to have to just call it history 2.0, aren't you, after this? Because it's going to be a different history, a lesser history. But, we're drawing a line under it. And let's go. The top 10. Number 10 was the moment... when TV presenter Ben Fogle was spiked in a pub in 2013. His drink was spiked. It happened when he was in a pub in Gloucestershire. And Ben describes it himself, the adventurer, it says here. He says he was putting his children to bed after drinking at a pub in Gloucestershire when he flipped. And he tweeted... Ben tweeted, whoever spiked my drink with mind-altering drugs and put me in A&E with a psychotic fit, do you think of the damage you would cause? I put it to you that yes, they probably did.
Do you know anything about spikers? Spikers do it precisely because they know what's going to happen.
So you spike
a drink thinking, hopefully this will have no effect.
Ben went on and said, Ben says he tried to jump out of a window and had to be restrained by his wife. He says, I was ranting, marching up and down, hitting walls, trying to jump out of windows, he added. He says he has never taken recreational drugs and he felt as if he was having an out-of-body experience.
I feel like I'm having an out-of-body experience here.
Ben's wife Marina and the couple's friends say they managed to lock him in a room while they waited for an ambulance to arrive.
Lock him in a room!
Till the ambulance arrives. I can't look at this, I can't bear to see it.
Lock him in a room until he calms down.
He was then sedated in hospital and kept in overnight before he was released.
Poor
there's
Ben
more
Fogle.
To this story. I'm just looking it up. There's more to this story. I'm pretty sure he mistook his child for a grain of rice. Yes, I found it. He said, I picked my daughter up and she felt incredibly light, like a grain of rice. I think he also tried to climb into a suitcase. I'm not sure about that. That might be a false memory.
But, I'm going to climb in his suitcase. And send myself on holiday.
Oh, yeah, there's more of it here. There's more of it in another newspaper report at the time. He says, I was acting like a madman. I thought I was doomed. I thought I was going to die. My wife ran out and my friends had to restrain me. It says, he even began impersonating Monty Python's Ministry of Silly Walks routine.
That's how people who've not taken acid imagine what happens to everyone when they take acid. You just start doing the Ministry of Silly Walks.
It was daft stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
I do feel sorry for them though. I mean, I know people who've been spiked with acid and have never bounced back.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Hallucinogens are really dangerous things, and And it's bad enough if you go into it thinking, well, I know what I'm getting into here. And then, presumably, I've never done acid myself. It's this drug that I'd much sooner fucking inject heroin into my eyeballs and take acid.
Yeah, this is it. You've seen people in the past who have, you know, not come back. You're like Sid Barrett and like Peter Green and Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that.
People don't come back. I know a bloke who's never come back from and he got spiked. He worked in the kitchen in a restaurant, and they and as banter, the chefs, so one of the other chefs spiked him with acid, and it's still to this day he's got like pretty far out, like mental health issues. And so you shouldn't spike people, especially not with acid. That said, Ben Fogle, although my sympathies are with you, I feel that we can laugh because you did recover, as far as I know, and it is, despite all of that, fucking hilarious.
He's the best person.
I mean, Ben Fogle of all people, because he's such a goody two shoes. Like Ben Fogle on acid, that's a TV show that I'd want to see. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, he says, the final quote I found is, they had to lock the doors and restrain me from hurting myself. I wanted to throw myself on a glass table and through a window. It went from scary to comical. I was trying to get into bags.
Hello, NHS. Hold on, yes. Can you describe your symptoms? Well, let's see now. First of all, do you have a temperature? No, my temperature is stable. I have been trying to get into bags. Oh dear, that sounds serious. You better come into A&E immediately.
It says, as a result, he spent 3 days having tests on his heart and brain and being seen by psychiatrists. He said, I've spent the last few days genuinely worrying that I was going crazy. When you go through this and don't know why, you start questioning your sanity. But 5 doctors have now concluded it was almost certainly drugs. 5 now, doctors.
Good news. We have come to a conclusion, and we're going to let you out of hospital today. We're going to discharge you. We have concluded that it was almost, definitely, probably drugs. And that's just not, don't take just my word for it. I've got 4 other doctors out back who'll back me up.
I want a 5th opinion. Oh, so there we are. Great stuff. Onwards, number 9 in the list. George Michael, inevitably, turns up in the top 10 because he's in the top 10 of everything, George Michael.
Yeah, he is.
This was the incident when he was also off his nut and he crashed into a branch of Snappy Snaps close to his home in London.
I mean, you're right. There's a number of different George Michael moments that could have gone in here. He was a man who was a walking, talking top 10 British moment.
He lived out loud, didn't he?
Every moment of George Michael's life was like a top 50 moment in British history. So, but we had to pick one and plough it, getting stuck. The other good thing about George Michael, I don't know why. I think it's wrong to drive intoxicated under it and the influence of anything. But
it is
funnier that he wasn't pissed. He was stoned and rammed a Range Rover into Snappy Snaps down the high street. Fucking great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
how that man never got a knighthood, I've no fucking idea.
At the time, he was described as being sweaty and spaced out.
Yeah, good luck to him.
And Snappy Snaps, that branch, then ended up becoming an impromptu shrine after George died, which, of course, he died on Christmas Day, didn't he? In 2016.
He did, at the very end of that horrific year. An awful, awful memory, really, isn't it? I mean, it was really bad.
Actually, the 2016 celebrity cull could have been in this top 50 list because, you know, so many celebrities died in 2016. It just went on and on and on and on. You had Carolina Hearn, Victoria Wood, George Michael, Prince. Muhammad Ali, Alan Rickman, Terry Wogan. You know, there were so many. It was non-stop, right?
He lost count.
Rick Parfitt. It was non-stop right through the
end. Ronnie Corbett.
Of course. That was when I first appeared on your talk radio show. Having to do an impromptu tribute to Ronnie Corbett. It was breaking news, wasn't it?
Andy, I need you to do a Corbett I need you to do a tribute to Corbett. Pronto.
No fucking problem, Sam. Here we go.
You're going to have to busk it. We're going live in 3, 2, 1.
But they all fucking died. They all died in 2016. And you had all these arseholes in the media going, yes, well, I think you'll find this is how it's going to be, because we're now at a period when the outburst of celebrity is now leading to these deaths.
Spare
it's like, fuck off.
Spare loads of these the have, cultural commentary, you can't.
Loads of these have died in their early 50s and stuff. This isn't how it's going to be.
Prince wasn't supposed to fucking die, or George Michael. They were well young.
Yeah. They all fucking died in 2016.
If Prince was still... Prince would have... But on average, Prince was fucking knocking out about 40 albums a year. We'd have another fucking... We'd have had another 200 albums out of Prince by now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and of course, it wasn't true that it was always going to be like this. It was a completely freak year. And I think 2016 Celebrity Cull could have been in this list because it was the year when celebrities were attacked. They were attacked by an actual year. Is that possible? Fuck knows, but it happened.
2016. I don't know what Nostradamus said about 2016, but it was also the year of the Brexit vote. So, God,
and Trump getting elected. Fuck me.
A lot of fucking weird things happened.
Yeah. Anyway, George Michael crashing into Snappy Snaps. That's number 9. Number 8, Grange Hill. Now, there could have been all kinds of various incidents from Grange Hill. That time when the kid drowned in the swimming pool, the time when Danny Kendall died in the car.
The time that Roland found Zamo taking heroin.
On the smack. But there's too many to choose one from, so we've gone for a symbolic one. And the greatest moment in Grange Hill history, we've decided, is in the opening titles when that sausage appears on the end of a fork from nowhere. And everyone around sort of looks startled by it. And I was startled the first time I saw that. It's like, you know, what the fuck's this?
Well, but most of us saw Grange Hill for the first time when we were still at primary school. Mm. And when you were at primary school, especially in those days, I don't know if it's the case these days, but when you're at primary school, the thought of secondary school fucking terrified you.
Yeah.
Right? You thought it was like, childhood was like this. You're going to have an all right time now. Until you're 11. But when you're 11, all of this is going to stop and we're going to put you into St. Quentin prison, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're going to be in an environment that is like the world's most horrific prison yard, right? That is what you are led to believe. And then you watch Grange Hill and it does nothing to fucking quell those fears whatsoever. It makes them worse. And everything you see in Grange Hill, you're like, fucking hell, heroin, fighting, Roland, gods, unscrupulous playground entrepreneurs.
Griffith Stepson.
Baxter.
I've told you before about my first day at comprehensive school, because the comprehensive I went to had a sixth form as well. So we're all in the playground on day one, and there's these sixth form men, and some of them had moustaches.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were old enough to grow a moustache back then. This is 1982. Moustaches were, you know, as de rigueur, as I think they're becoming again now.
You were legally allowed to grow a moustache at 13. I mean, obviously it changed under New Labour.
And they were like 6 foot tall. And it was like, what the
hairy,
fuck is this?
Smoking fags or pipes in some cases.
Yeah. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it was terrifying. Yeah. You shouldn't be thrown in. I mean, like you say, you're still a child and there are men everywhere and it's fucking scary. But the sausage in Grange Hill, because I would watch it, and this is genuine, that bit with the sausage, you sort of think, you're there and you're thinking, this is a cartoon rendition of what it's like at a comprehensive school, right? A school just like the one I'm about to start. And in it, it is such an anarchic and dangerous atmosphere that another person, a pupil, can get a sausage, a whole sausage on the end of a fork, and just fucking lunge into a group of other children with it. There's people lunging about with sausages on the end of forks, trying to do what? I don't know. But it's fucking mad. It's anarchy. It's mayhem.
It begs the question, also, why would anybody waste a sausage like that?
Because the other thing about that sausage, which we all know, is that it looks fucking delicious.
Doesn't it?
It's shiny, it's glistening with fat.
Meaty. Yeah.
It's just, it's a perfect looking sausage. And yeah, part of you does think, what kind of madhouse is this where people are wasting sausages? If I had a sausage like that for lunch, that would be heading nowhere other than my guts.
Straight into your guts, hidden in your guts forever.
I mean, you didn't get sausages at school dinners anyway. It was too luxurious to get a sausage.
I wouldn't even want to shit it out. I'd want it to stay in my guts forever.
Yeah.
It's such a good sausage.
Well, if it was a Richmond sausage, it probably would. Apparently, a Richmond sausage takes up to 2 decades to decompose in your guts. But that's the way I like a sausage. It's more value for money, isn't it?
Well, I mean, this is it with sausages. I used to work with someone who'd worked in Asda sausage processing plant.
Compound.
When she was younger, and she went, nah, no more. I'm a vegetarian now after seeing what I saw in that facility. Yeah, she wouldn't speak about it. It was her Vietnam, really.
Well, you know, I'm vegetarian now, and sausages, as you know, in my pre-vegetarian days were my favourite thing, so it was the worst thing to give up. But just as when I gave up drink, a load of new 0% beers came on the market, again, I gave up meat, and now it used to just be like fucking Linda McCartney sausages. Now there are fucking all sorts of different veggie sausages, and veggie sausage technology has moved on so much. It'll never look as nice as a meat sausage, but they are tasty. They're fine. Good. And you know you're not necessarily eating cock.
Yeah. Pig cock. Pig cock.
Mmm, delicious pig cock. God, I miss it.
Number 7. We're back in 2016 again, and another celebrity death, and it's the death of David Bowie, but it's not the actual death itself. It's something that happened a day or two afterwards in the celebrity Big Brother house that was running at the time. And of course, Bowie's first wife, Angie, was in the house, and somebody passed on the news to her in the diary room that David Bowie had died.
Yeah.
And she obviously reacted borderline hysterically. She's very upset. And the first person she came across was Tiffany Pollard. I can't even remember why Tiffany was famous. But Tiffany asked Angie if she was okay. Angie wasn't okay, so she went to the couch with Tiffany. And Angie eventually managed to get the words out that David is dead. Now, of course, Tiffany didn't realise that she was referring to David Bowie. She thought that she was referring to their fellow housemate, David Guest, who'd been ill in bed for the previous day.
Yeah.
So Tiffany has an incredible fucking hysterical breakdown. She thinks David Guest has died in the house. She doesn't realise it's Bowie. And there it all is. You've got to watch it. It's one of the best moments of television I think there's ever been in any series. It's just so... You couldn't fucking write it. You just couldn't write it. It's so good. The fact that the fates conspired for David Guest to be ill in bed, and then for David Bowie to die, and for this to all happen within the confines of the celebrity Big Brother house. It's another one of 2016's glorious tricks.
Well, like you said, there were mysterious forces at play in 2016.
Definitely.
And that's just another example.
And you've got the likes of Darren Day, Daniela Westbrook in there as well for the fallout of this. It was just, you know, incredible. And poor Tiffany Pollard, I don't think she's ever been the same since. I can't imagine.
I don't know who she is. But you say, why was she famous?
No.
Well, how could you not be famous with a name like Tiffany Pollard, to be fair?
Yeah, crying out, innit? Crying out for fame. Mm. So there we go. I think that's probably when Big Brother had to die after that. That's probably the incident.
They thought, we've got nowhere. We can't go any further with this.
No.
It's reached its peak.
On number 6 in the chart, and this is John Smeaton, the Glaswegian who punched a tourist in Glasgow airport.
And the context is important here, really, isn't it? Because it was around the time, it was in the post 9/11 era when we were all on high alert for terrorist attacks, and everyone, especially in places like airports, lived in fear. A state of complete anxiety at all times that some sort of really elaborate terrorist attack was about to play out. But not this cunt. He wasn't worried, was he?
He was the hero we didn't know we needed. But he was there. He was a baggage handler at Glasgow Airport. I'll just read from a newspaper report at the time what happened. Smeato was on a fag break when the terrorist Bilal Abdullah targeted the airport 30th of June 2007. He drove a dark green Jeep Cherokee packed with gas canisters at the terminal's glass doors, setting it alight. Oh, yeah, there's another guy, Kafil Ahmed. It was the other word. Ahmed then turned himself into a human fireball, and he did eventually die a month later of his injuries.
From his burns.
So Smeaton was having a fag break, and he saw the burning Jeep, and he heard three explosions, and he's quoted as saying, "What's the score? I've got to get this sorted." I thought, that's not right, and ran over to assist. All that was going through my mind was, I've got to help the policeman. I'm not letting these guys get away with this. And he shouted, "Fucking come on then," and aimed a kick in the testicles at Kafil Ahmed, who later died from his 90% burns. And Smeaton shot to fame. And I think he got a medal. Yeah, he did.
Wasn't in the interview afterwards, wasn't his classic phrase, "This is Glasgow, we'll set about you."
This is Glasgow, we'll just set about you.
Yeah. Which I've always thought they should adopt as like their sort of slogan for you know, the tourist board. Do you know what I mean? And you should have it. They should have it at the airport when you arrive and you know, you're getting off the plane. That's what they should have on all of their branding.
Yeah,
this is Glasgow. We'll set about you.
We'll set about you. Yeah. So there we are. John Smeaton punched a burning terrorist. Or kicked him in the balls.
Kicked him in the nuts. Yeah. And just, it's a lesson for all of us kids. If you do see a terrorist, especially a burning one, don't be a shitbag. Just kick him in the balls. Simple as
I
that.
I think it's the best way, because your leg with the foot on the end is furthest away from yourself at that point, isn't it? The furthest extended point. Yeah. Possible, so you're less likely to catch fire yourself.
Exactly, and you know, a lot of shoes, most shoes these days are fire resistant, flame resistant. I spray all of mine with fire resistant spray before I go out, because you never know
when you're gonna have to kick a terrorist in the balls while ablaze.
Jalapeño.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you wouldn't be hearing this brief but annoying message if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tits.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Jalapeño.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
Number 5, Bielsa spies on Lampard. I can't remember when this was, probably about 2018, but this was the moment when Frank Lampard became the Frank Lampard that we know and love.
Yeah, I you know, obviously I always knew that was the real Frank Lampard. You could tell because he just took him. There was a look on Frank Lampard's face from day one. And remember, I would have seen him make his debut. You know, I saw him right from the start of his career.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And right from the beginning at West Ham, he had the look of what we would now call a Lampard about him. Mm. He looked like, we knew that he'd gone to this posh school. We knew that he was a daddy's boy, right? And the main thing was that he was completely humourless, which is the worst crime of all, taking yourself deadly serious. And Frank always took himself dead serious. And to be fair to him, that's one of the reasons why he became one of the greatest footballers of his generation, right? There's no denying brilliant footballer and massive success. And I think he was driven because he had that sort of, you know, that kind of seriousness about him. He didn't have natural talent as such. But I knew from the beginning, I always knew he had this in him. And I was just waiting. I spent years waiting for him to, for the mask to slip and for him to reveal himself. And what's good about, ever since he freaked out, ever since Bielsa tipped him over the edge, it spiralled from there, hasn't it? It wasn't like just one moment of him being Lampardy. Since then, yeah. I mean, not a day goes by without someone tweeting us a new incident of Lampardy by Lampard.
And it was,
and what I think is, in our list of top 50 moments, there's a few moments, and there's even at least one still to come, where they're great British moments that have been created by outsiders, foreigners, who've come in and applied their own this and that sort of, you know, philosophy and ideals to our slightly Lampardy convention and rule-obsessed society and just cause mayhem in the process. So that's Cantona doing a kung fu kick, Bielsa spying on Lampard, and there's one, if you can imagine, still to come in this list that trumps all of them.
Trumps but a lot of them, yeah.
In every case, they're united by the this and that attitude of a foreigner basically sending the British public into an absolute fucking frenzy.
I mean, that's the thing. It's not so much the incident itself, it's what it led to in this case,
it's the
isn't
reaction.
It? It's what the genie coming out of the bottle. And I'm looking at a Guardian piece about it, and then there's some links to some other stories about the Spygate thing at the bottom. And this, I'm not even going to click on it because I don't need to know anymore, but the headline is, "I'd rather not coach than use spy tactics," says Lampard, "after Derby lose at Leeds." "I'd rather give it all up than become a spy."
"If people say that you have to spy now to be a manager, then I'll go and do something else, like work in a city bank. Or a shoe shop. Or a haberdasher's."
And, I'm looking at it. Pochettino at the time described it as not a surprise.
Pochettino, not a surprise. Of course,
was Bielsa's like disciple, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And played under him. And Pochettino says, "There is nothing wrong to try to find information and know a bit more about what the opponents are doing. This happened 30 years ago in Argentina. Not only Marcelo, all the managers were like this. Here, maybe it is a little bit weird, but in Argentina it happened. It's not a big issue or a big deal."
That's my way of saying calm down, pussycat.
And as you've just hinted at, this is not the last time in this list where we're going to be talking about Argentina getting one over England with underhand tactics.
What I think is, they say that for every yin there has to be a yang, right? And you cannot exist, you know, like Sherlock Holmes could not exist without Moriarty, right? And Argentina is our Moriarty. And I feel that the Argentinian influence or impact on the British is always a brilliant one, because it brings out the most hilarious side of the British public.
I've got a very lengthy quote here from Lampard after Leeds beat Derby in the match itself. Here we go. "I don't think that at any level of sport it's right to send men to break into private property. It's a cultural thing, but I was very surprised by it and by the frank admission he's done it before. Cheating is a..."
"Yeah, I've done it before. I'd do it again."
"Cheating is a big word, but this is over the line. I spent 50 hours watching tapes of Leeds game this week, and that's what the best managers do. I was a fan of Bielsa's from afar, but I'd rather not coach than send people undercover on their hands and knees in the undergrowth." Actual quotes there from Frank Lampard.
Unbelievable.
Fucking,
I mean,
hell.
I didn't know those full quotes. That is like stuff that is beyond parody.
Oh, God.
You can't pay money without an invoice. It's simply illegal. It's against the law. Lampard then went on to rail against poor administrative practices in Leeds United's accountancy and bought ledger departments. While I've got you here, I'd like to talk about correct invoicing procedures.
Oh, God. So there, that's number five in our top 50. Number
and now four. We're into the big four. The four greatest moments to have ever happened in the history of this wonderful country.
Yeah, number four, 1817's Brian Harvey running over himself after eating too many jack of potatoes. Mm. He reversed over himself, didn't he? And we've covered this before. And I can't remember why we covered it before. Was it part of...
Why wouldn't we have done? We'll cover it again as well. This won't be the last any of you hear of Brian Harvey running himself over, because it's one of the best things to have ever happened. Brian Harvey, obviously, because it was really worrying, but thank God.
Seriously injured. Yeah.
Thank God he pulled through, didn't run himself over and kill himself. But, it's got the lot. He'd eaten... I can't remember. I think it was three jacket potatoes with tuna mayo. Yeah. And a lot of people said that it was the tuna mayo is very, you know, you have to know that they were tuna potatoes. They weren't just normal butter or cheese ones.
Yeah. I mean, the tuna
because
might
it's very
slightly
rich.
Off,
if you mixed, a sort of very oily, meaty fish like tuna with a big dollop of mayonnaise, which is presumably what had been done, and then you combine that with all of the starchy potato, that's got a high. If you eat three of those, Andy, whoever you are, even if you're Hercules the Bear, it's going to have a fucking bad impact on your state of mind.
I mean, even if the tuna or the mayonnaise or both were on the turn slightly, that can trigger what happened quite easily. Because what happened was he yanked open his car door to vomit while driving down a cul-de-sac. And he was tossed from his seat and crushed underneath his speeding car, shattering his pelvis. It's so easily done. It's so easily done.
He shouldn't. If you're going to be sick, you know, just find the time to stop the car.
Mm.
Don't try and be sick out of a moving vehicle, because there's a number of things that can go wrong.
So he was reversing, I think. And he said, instead of putting my foot on the brake, I put it on the accelerator and it flew back. I must have hit four or five parked cars. It must have thrown me out of the car. He was in a coma for several weeks when it happened. It was massive. He says, my stomach was pushed into my lungs, which collapsed. I was told the heel of one of my feet was found up around the back of my head.
Wow.
You know, he'd made suicide attempts before then, Brian Harvey. He was open about that.
But this wasn't an attempted suicide. This was just an accident.
As he said on GMTV, if you were going to commit suicide, you wouldn't do it like this.
Hmm.
You wouldn't. Of course you wouldn't. You wouldn't eat three big potatoes then reverse over yourself. But
it's not the first thing you think of, I don't suppose, when you're considering how to take your own life anyway.
No, but then I suppose...
So that's number four.
You go into a dark place when that sort of thing happens. But that's number four. Number three is another Harvey. It's Katie Price's son, Harvey. And this was him on TV. Shall we just play the clip for this one?
Say hello.
You'd say hello?
Yes.
If someone says something horrible to Harvey, what does Harvey say?
Hello, you cunt.
Harvey.
I think that was on Loose Women. I think it was on Loose Women.
I think it
but
was,
like,
yeah.
Katie Price, what I like about... I mean, I love Katie Price. She's amazing. I would have... If it had been a top 100, I think we would have just found room for, like, one place, which was simply Katie Price, right? Because her antics are sensational. And what's funny is the way she goes, Harvey. And even though it's on TV, she can't help but grin broadly.
She's grinning.
Knows
he's
how funny.
He's got a big grin on his face because he's done
it. He knows
what
he's up to. I say, hello, you can.
Hello, you can.
That's the way he says it. Hello, you can. That, mate, it's third in our list. Is it the greatest TV moment of all time? Depends how you categorise it, but it was absolutely sensational. Absolutely mind-blowing. Watershed moment. Nothing's been the same since.
Well, it's not the greatest TV moment because I would say the greatest TV moment is number two in the list. Mm. And it is a very short clip, which we did on Twitter a while ago. It's Mr. Blobby entering the room. I think, is it in This Morning?
It's hard to tell where it is. It looks like the sort of set you get on something like Saturday Kitchen.
Or something like that.
It's like a sort of a twee kitchen-based set. And Blobby, I mean, it's just impossible to do it justice with words, but the simple way of describing it is the set is empty. Blobby walks through the door with this extremely confident swagger about him, a big, his trademark grin plastered across his big pink face. Yep. And he just breezes across the room, casually smashing things as he goes on his merry way. And that
There's double doors, double glass doors. He's got one hand on each of the doors. He just pushes them both open and they bang against the sides. He then strides into the room. He sees a bunch of flowers in a vase to his left. They just get swiped straight off the bench with his left hand.
Without
breaking stride.
He doesn't even look at them, really. He's just they're gone.
He's looking straight ahead. He doesn't look at them. There's a table with three or four chairs around it. He walks through the chairs. He doesn't walk around them.
Out of the way for those chairs. I'm a busy bloke.
The chairs clatter into each other. The flowers are on the floor, and then he goes off to wherever it is he's going.
He keeps going, and that's what I like about it as well. There's a mystery to it. You think, he's definitely a man on a mission. He's got somewhere he needs to be. He's got somewhere he wants to be. He hasn't got time for anything stopping him or getting him in his way. And he's going there with complete focus and determination, but we never know where that place is. Yeah. And that is what lends this clip something extra special. When this was sent to us as part of our request for the ultimate all right cunts moments.
Yeah. It was sent, I'll name check him, it was sent in by Greg LUFC 1919 on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, Greg, you did a great thing because I've always been a fan of Blobby, but I'd never seen this clip before. And since you sent it to us, I think I watched it more than 100 times in one day. I never got less funny. It actually always gets more funny.
I've got a problem with things like Strictly Come Dancing, right? And choreographed dancing. I can't bear to watch it. I like dancing myself. I can't dance, but I like doing it. And I like to see other people dancing, enjoy themselves, express themselves. But when it's choreographed to the nth degree and everyone knows what they're meant to be doing, I just can't be doing with it. It's just, I can't watch it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because it's by definition, it's contrived.
Yeah. This is better than anything you will ever see on Strictly Come Dancing in terms of its grace, its power, the precision,
the expressiveness,
the vase going off. It's a beautiful combination of.
It's like to get tickets to go and see the Royal Ballet. My mum's always going to the Royal Ballet, but it's fucking expensive. And I would say you can get more out of watching this clip of Blobby than you would going to see Swan Lake or one of them.
Totally, totally. And you don't even leave the house. It's lockdown friendly. So there we go. That's number two. So that by definition is the greatest TV moment. Number one in the chart did appear on TV, but it wasn't televised. It was a sporting moment, of course. The greatest moment in British history is Diego Maradona's handball in the 1986 World Cup for Argentina versus England. Nothing tops it. Nothing at all tops it.
No,
we discussed it recently at great length. It was, I mean, it even inspired a ZX Spectrum computer game called Peter Shilton Handball Maradona. Such was its fucking ubiquitousness.
And if that doesn't mark it out as the greatest British moment of all time, I don't know what does.
It's marked out, it's divided the nation into the 97% and the 3%.
Yeah.
More than anything else has. It's still to this day, the fact that it still upsets people and it still upsets Peter Shilton is just tantamount to its power and its majesty. Maradona should not be blamed at all. The referee and the linesman, they should take all of the blame. Maradona did what he did.
And Shilton. If there's a blame ladder, then at the top is the referee, followed by linesman, followed by Peter Shilton, and right down the bottom is Maradona.
Right down the bottom. Right at the bottom, on the ground, holding the ladder up, or giving it a shake, I suppose. Yeah, he did what he did. It was up to them to catch him, and they didn't.
Yeah, great underline of British of English hypocrisy as well. You saw Maradona at a press conference in Scotland a few years ago and was asked if he understood why English players were still angry about the incident. And he said, usually when asked about it, he laughs it off or he changes the subject or he says, oh, well, these things happen, never mind. This time he obviously wasn't in the mood, but he also knew he was in Scotland and that they love a bit of anti-English sentiment. And he said, listen, England won the World Cup by scoring a goal that never crossed the line. And then he said, and in fact, it didn't cross the line by a load. And he was doing it with his hands and showing how much he was very exaggerating the extent to which, like, Jeff Hurst's goal didn't cross the line. And he was going, so I don't think they've got anything to talk about. So obviously that went down very well in Scotland. But even to me as an Englishman, I thought, yeah, for fuck's sake. For fuck's sake. What? You know, always, of course, worth remembering that just for good measure, he followed that goal up with the best cocaine goal of all time, probably the best World Cup goal ever, right? Which should have been enough to shut everyone up and go, look, if you didn't like the first one, here's the second one for you, cunts.
Well, as someone did recently after Maradona died, they put together a footage of all of the kickings that Maradona received in that match from England players and said, well, is this cheating then? Because if that's cheating with a handball, this is cheating as well. Yeah. It's quite true. Totally
Absolutely
true.
Absolutely fucking right. And why is it a great British moment? Well, I suppose in some ways it brought the other nations together in celebration, the non-English parts of Britain, right? And also it just taught the English, it showed a certain side of Englishness that is one that we don't necessarily admire, but in some ways we celebrate it because it's just part of the fucking weird mix that we have here, right? It flushed out the Lampards in everyone.
I mean, when we were putting together this list, there were some of our Scottish listeners that were saying, I hope there's going to be some Scottish things in this list.
Well, there you go.
There you go. That one's for you, right at number one.
Listen, in the top 10, you've got, this is Glasgow, we're set about you. And you've got fucking England being cheated out of the World Cup. So what more do you want, Scotland?
And you've also got the most English man imaginable, Ben Fogle, being spiked and treated by the window.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's all there for you. That's the top 50. That's it. We've enjoyed doing this. Hope you've enjoyed listening to it.
Don't at us. We don't want you. We don't want your opinions on what you think was wrong
or what
we missed.
You've had plenty of opportunities to suggest things as well. And if your suggestion didn't make the grade, there's a reason for that. So think twice before you suggest stuff again. thanks very much for listening. Hope you're enjoying your Christmas break and hope you enjoy the rest of it. And we'll be back with more new stuff in 2021. Au revoir!
TTFN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.